Are you awake?
Yes.
Do you remember where you were when you finally woke up? Do you remember how old you were? Do you remember who was in your life when you finally woke up? So people ask me all the time, "So, how did you become a minister?" As if that is a 3-minute answer. And sometimes there just isn't enough time, and so I'll give the quickie version, which is kind of a resume version, you know, the curriculum vitae of how I went from corporate drudgery to religious life. I can tell that story really quickly. But if the questioner seems genuinely interested, and if we have some time, I will tell them the longer story of my waking up. And the longer story begins once upon a time. And if I had to pinpoint a particular moment in my life, I would have to say that it was 1988. So in 1988, I had just graduated from college, and I was living in a tiny studio apartment all by myself. First time living by myself, I was in Baltimore, and I had this terrible job in an insurance agency. Talk about drudgery, cubicle drudgery. But it was a good job. That year, Joseph Campbell had been interviewed by Bill Moyer right before his death, and there in the summer of 1988, those interviews were broadcast on PBS. Do you remember this series? Do you remember The Power of Myth? Bill Moyer's interviewing Joseph Campbell. I was completely enthralled by these ideas of a heroic quest. And this was the first time that I had heard the phrase, "Follow your bliss." You know that one? Follow your bliss. It was Joseph Campbell who said that. He said, if you follow your bliss, you put yourself on kind of a track that has been there all the while, waiting for you, and the life that you ought to be living is the one that you are living. That's bliss. When you have found your path and you are living it and you are walking on that path just as you were meant to do. It sounds so simple, but here I was walking this path over here thinking that was my life. Campbell continues and says that when you can see that path, that bliss, then you begin to meet people who are in your field of bliss, and they will continue to open more doors for you. Isn't that an amazing idea? Follow your bliss. Don't follow your fear. So it sounded good to me, but I had no idea what that meant. I can kind of understand rationally what that might mean, but I don't really know what that means. I don't know what my bliss is. I don't know. I knew, though, that that's what I wanted to find. I knew that such a thing existed and that I wanted to make that my first heroic quest, is to go find my path to my bliss. And so I'm looking out at this congregation and I'm thinking, yeah, I can see it. I can see you all have, some of you have found your bliss and you are walking that path. And others, I can tell, you are searching for your bliss. You definitely know it's out there and you are questing, you are looking, you are working, you are suffering, you're struggling to find your bliss. And that's where a lot of people are, I think, when they come into a UU congregation, searching for what true contentment is, searching for what deep fulfillment in life really means. So those of you who have been with me for a number of years know that Howard Thurman is one of my spiritual mentors and mystical guides. He's the one who keeps reminding us that what the world really needs is for people to come alive. Right? What the world really needs is for people to wake up and follow their bliss. He says, there is something in every one of you that waits and listens for the sound of your genuine self. It is the only true guide you will ever have. And if you cannot hear it, you will all of your life spend your days on the ends of strings that someone else pulls. Yeah, you're going, mm-hmm. Because you know what it's like to live a life that's not yours. You know what it's like to live for the expectations of others, or perhaps to live the unlived life of your parents, or live for your children. You know what it's like not to live in harmony with your bliss and your true deep self. Your bliss is your true self, your deep self, that part that transcends your ego and the part that is somehow mysteriously connected to everything and everyone. Your bliss has always been there, always knocking at the door, asking, today, is today the day that you might want to come out and play? And day after day we say, no, we're too busy taking care of the kids, we're working, we're paying the bills. And, you know, I have found other things to keep me occupied, other soul-numbing activities like judging other people, regretting my past, complaining about the world, being dissatisfied, feeling despair, being cynical. Those are keeping me very busy, so. And your bliss keeps knocking. Every day, every morning, knock, knock, knock. Are you ready to come out and play? Oh, not today. But then one day, for some unknown, mysterious reason, you hear the knock and you say, yes, I will come out and play today. I will come with you. I will follow my bliss. Yes, I will say yes today because, frankly, I have grown tired of my constructed self. I have grown tired of myself, and I would like to come out and play with you. I would like to follow my bliss. And you know what happens? If you keep saying yes, and if you keep following your bliss, what is inevitable is that you will find yourself doing ministry. Uh-huh. And that's because as you keep saying yes, you keep finding things that are more important than you are. Your concerns will radiate out and out and out, and your bliss will eventually lead you to the world's deepest needs. When you have chosen to dedicate your life to that which is greater than you, then this is ministry. And I know that a lot of you have dedicated yourselves to that which is bigger than yourself. And therefore, you're all doing ministry. You're doing all kinds of amazing ministry. You're doing ministries to promote health and fitness and wellness. You're doing ministry of education, of nurturing our children. You're doing ministry of music that cracks open the hard heart. You're doing ministry of the word, preaching and liturgy. You're doing ministry of service to justice and peace. You're doing all kinds of ministry every single day. One key aspect of Unitarian Universalism is our belief that ministry does not belong exclusively to the ordained clergy. It belongs to everyone. Ministry is the vocation of every single person of faith. This idea of shared ministry and the priesthood of all believers is a very old, very well-established foundation of our liberal faith. The notion of the priesthood of all believers goes way back to the New Testament, to the Christian scriptures, to the early Christian understanding that the experience of the divine was mediated solely through the person or the figure of Jesus and not through any ordained office holder, right? The early church had no priests. It was informal, it was egalitarian, it was much like a UU congregation, I would imagine, with each believer expected to use his or her special gifts to enhance and build up the community. This self-governing and non-hierarchical practice, though, didn't last very long. By the time Martin Luther took up his hammer and nailed his 95 theses on the church of the Wittenberg Church in 1517, access to the divine was not only mediated through the very exclusive group of priests, but it was mediated for profit. Today, Unitarian Universalists are direct descendants of the Protestant Reformation, except that our branch, I guess, took a turn toward the left in what we call the Radical Reformation. And there you'll find heroes like Michael Servetus, who was willing to be burned at the stake for his beliefs, for the truth. Now, Servetus was not an ordained person. He was not clergy. He was just a regular lay person living out his bliss, living out of his fierce commitment to the truth. Now, when these radical ideas landed on the shore of the New World here, they fit perfectly with the pilgrims' vision of self-governing, interdependent, yet autonomous congregations who would work together in covenant rather than under a priestly hierarchy. And so here we are today, a priesthood of all believers, ministering to one another and to the world. There are some awful things happening in the world today. There's no question that this world could use some good ministering. We have natural disasters bringing us drought in California and floods in Texas, earthquakes in Nepal, and I just learned this morning in Japan as well. Natural disasters bringing deadly extreme heat to our neighbors in India. And of course, some of these awful things that happen in the world are not from nature, but they are things that human beings do to one another and do to the entire realm of creation. Little things like daily disrespect of one another, even those in our families that we see every morning. Unkind words, thoughtless disregard, and then there are the extremes of what we can do to one another, murder, kidnapping, executions. Then there are just the everyday sorrows of being human. The vice president's son dies of brain cancer. Jobs are lost, bills stack up and remain unpaid, relationships end, hearts are broken, and hope loses out to despair. This world is in need of some good ministry. Can you imagine if we had a lot more ministers out in the world? And I'm not talking about ordained clergy. I'm talking about ministers like you all. We could really use legions of people out there who will revere the sacredness in another person and sacredness of the living earth. We could use a whole bunch of ministers who would be present to other people and encourage them to follow their bliss. So how do you get ready to be a minister to the world? How do you get ready to minister to the needs of the world? Well, it's always the same answer. Start locally, right? And then serve globally. You always have to start with yourself. And that's sometimes the hardest part. First, we practice ministering to ourselves, which means forgiving ourselves. It means being kind and gentle and loving to our entire being, even the parts that we find ugly and hideous and sinful. Can you love your entire being? Can you minister to yourself, to your heart, to your soul? And then, as that practice gets stronger, we minister to members of this community. 270-something UUs here in the Williamsburg congregation. Each time we get together is another opportunity to do ministry. And I know it sometimes feels like, well, we're just moving chairs, right? Or we're just making coffee. We're just sweeping the driveway. We're just sitting in yet another committee meeting. We're taking notes in the board meeting. But it's not just that. Because every time that we are together, we are ministering to one another. Or at least there's the opportunity presented that we are ministering to each other. We are serving each other. Serving each other in times of work and productivity. Serving each other in times of grief and sorrow and pain. Serving each other by committing our lives to these high principles, principles like freedom and justice and hope and dignity, interdependence and peace. This is our ministry. Some people have asked me if I'm leaving the ministry when they find out I'm leaving this congregation. It never occurred to me. It's not a choice because in 2006, when this congregation ordained me, you ordained me for life. I took a vow to commit my entire life to the service of God. This is my language, serving God. You can say serving humanity. You can say serving life, serving all of creation. But for me, this is a lifelong, solemn commitment. My ministry may not happen within the four walls of a church, because just as there are 100 ways to kneel and kiss the ground, there are at least 100 ways to do ministry out in the world. There are chaplains in universities and hospitals and nursing homes, with law enforcement and the military. There's even a chaplain at some of the biggest airports in the world. There are nonprofit organizations. There is an entire universe of ministry available to me. I have no idea where I'm going next, but I know that I will always be a minister. And I hope that you all have that sense of ministry as well. being part of this congregation for so long. I hope that you have internalized the mission of WUU, which is simply to serve, minister, to serve, to humble yourself for something greater than yourself. Ministry is serving others. We don't minister by just sitting still and keeping to ourselves. Ministry necessarily means that you have to be involved with other people. You have to talk to strangers. You have to ask people about their lives. You have to do things that are uncomfortable and unpleasant. You have to eat food that you don't think is delicious. Sometimes you have to sleep on a cold floor. Sometimes you have to go out of your way to pick up somebody on the way to church. Sometimes you have to sweat and toil in the kitchen. It's not all fun and games. But ministry is serving others. Serving others in faith. It is celebrating the joys of life and the accomplishments of the human spirit. Ministry is always standing up for what is right and good, standing up for what is just. Ministry is all that we do together. Ministry is all that we do together. May you continue to serve in love, in joy, in